You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Well, hi, everybody. It's good to be back. I am Glenn Geek, founder of the Horse Radio Network and host of Horses in the Morning, the daily podcast for the last 15 years. And welcome to the WESA Retail Roundup. We are 2 weeks away from Dallas.
Yay.
The Retail Roundup is your go-to virtual hub for all things retail. Join panel discussions, learn from webinars, share your thoughts, ask questions, and connect with your community. We host a virtual event or share educational content every Monday via the Retail Roundup Facebook group. If you haven't joined that yet, hop on over to Facebook and just search Retail Roundup and it'll pop up. My wife and I, my wife hosts the WESA podcast called Wisdom by WESA, and we will both be there at WESA the Wednesday and Thursday in August. So we'll be there the first 2 days and then flying back home from one oven to the other from Dallas back to Ocala. So today, if you want more in-store traffic and higher sales, this is the episode to listen to. Retail expert Nicole Leinbach-Hoffman is joining us. She is the author of Retail 101, and she shares how to build a strong online presence that drives real results on the sales floor. Whether you're a boutique owner or prepping for the upcoming WESA trade show, learn how to connect clicks to foot traffic and turn digital buzz into in-person buys. So we're really covering both avenues here. We're covering retailers and wholesalers who are going to be set up trying to make sales at WESA. So it's two different things we're covering here today. Nicole is a returning Retail Roundup expert. She was back in March the 10th. She was here. And she's the founder of RetailMinded.com and an influential voice in the retail industry. So you travel quite a bit to do retail conferences and things too, right?
I do. I mean, in fact, I have a public or an article, I should say, with Smart Retailer every month. And one of my most favorite articles I do is Retail on the Road, that I take pictures of all the great places that I get to go. And I typically speak at great conferences, like, let's say, for example, WESA or something. And I love getting to see retail from around the world. I mean, that's the best part. And I can apply retail from one category to the next. And it's just a lot of fun.
So obviously, we're in the horse niche here. What other niches have you done recently?
So, well, I just committed to a pool group. So working with like pool retailers.
Like the game pool?
Not billiards, but like pools in your backyards.
Oh, okay.
Everything from pools in your backyards to we have fashion. Like I'll be speaking at Magic coming up here soon in Las Vegas, which is of course, surrounds all of us, so the apparel that you wear and just the clothing category in general. But I always kind of joke, I do everything from fashion to footwear to flooring. So I do a lot of stuff in the hardwood floor space, which is
really
because that's what my husband is in his business. But I was doing that long before I met him, but everything. So I really cross categories. The one thing that's great about retail is consumers are all within various retail settings too. So whether you're within like the category of, you know, equestrian or the category of, let's say, fashion, you can learn from everyone. So you get to apply a lot of these things, and maybe it's not identical. It certainly isn't. I'd love to customize things, but there's still a lot to learn from the consumer behavior.
We always say, and I've always said this for the whole time, you know, we've been doing shows, is that the horse people are a little different. And there are a couple of categories that kind of apply. And the reason we say they're different is because they are addicted to horses. They spend all their money on horses. That's all they think about. And there are a couple other niches like that, but not too many that go to the depth that horse people do and the expense that horse people do.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, then you're speaking to the sentiment, the emotion of those consumers, right?
Well, and that is what drives a lot of sales in the horse world.
Yes. Yes. I mean, in our family, I live in Colorado, you know, my brother and sister-in-law, they have many horses, you know, I spend Sundays often saying hello to them. So, you know, and talking about where she's making her purchases and all.
And does she post anything on her Facebook page other than pictures of horses?
No, she does not.
No.
Oops. That would be my dog.
Oh, that's well. There you go. We love dogs and cats and horses on the show.
Yes, there's lots of dogs in this house.
So. Yeah, no problem. We love that. We're all dog people too. All horse people have 25 dogs, so I mean, that's normal. Yeah, but it is true. I mean, horse people are a little different that way, which really does drive one their spending. Where
yes.
They might buy where somebody else might hold back a little bit. If you're a biker or skier or whatever, you know.
Yeah, and not just their spending, their lifestyle, as you already know, because where they live, how they live, the house they buy, the land they want to live on, the car or truck more so that they invest in. There's so many details that influence this.
Well, let's talk a little bit about online visibility and brick and mortar stores. We're going to kind of cover both today. So how does this a store's online presence influence foot traffic?
So the online presence is incredibly important. As each year passes, in fact, it becomes more and more important. And I want to first say that I am a huge brick and mortar lover. You know, my passion for brick and mortar retail is massive. So I don't want to suggest that online is trying to take away from brick and mortar. I want to recognize that your online visibility can lead to in-store brick and mortar sales. And so there's just a lot to think about when we think about where we are online and how that can drive traffic to your physical store.
So let's talk about the digital visibility. And part of that, of course, is your Google profile, you know, which obviously has become so important because if I'm searching to go somewhere in a town that I haven't been to too often and I want a specific category, I'm either going to Google Maps or I'm just searching online and hoping it pops up. So let's talk about your Google business profile. What's critical? What can people change? How can they make it more friendly so that it does, so you're the first one that pops up?
So the first thing you want to do is make sure that you are in fact represented in all the Google, you know, identification touch points that exist. So if you were to go to Google today, put in your store name, see what it says, because you're immediately going to find out that of course your store name is being shared, but so is your contact information. And many times contact information changes over time. So you might need to update that. You also want to make sure you're snagging the Google business profile so that you can actually become the administrator or owner of your actual account details.
You have to claim that in the first place.
Yes, right. You do. And a lot of people don't do that. They just assume it'll show up. And you might show up in a Google search, but that doesn't mean that you've actually claimed your profile on Google. So you want to make sure that you own that, so you have full control over what you're sharing. And to be honest, they kind of make it easy from there, because then they're going to ask you your profile, your contact details, how do people get in touch via, you know, let's say email, what's your preferred method for
what customers? Are your hours? I hate it when I go to one where the hours aren't there.
Yes, exactly right. And you could also go in there, to your point, if there's, let's say, you're a small family business and you close your doors once every May for 5 days for a family vacation or something. You can actually identify that with a very quick update. So those are the types of details that you want to start to manage and put into your routine so that consumers feel as if they're connected to you and they know what's going on.
So, and just make sure all the information's accurate, because the one thing I don't want to do is if I'm driving to a place to go specifically to a store, I'm going to plug it into Google search. I'm going to take the Google results that come up. The last thing I want to do then is go to your website and then try and find your hours on your website. It's another step that I want to have to take. Plus, the other thing that drives me absolutely insane, there's two things that are on the Google search that if they aren't there, they drive me crazy. One is the hours, because obviously I'm going there to your physical location. I need to know the hours. The second thing is if you don't have a link to your website, if you haven't updated a link to your website on your Google profile and I need to go to your website for some reason, then I got to do a separate, I got to try and find it in the list.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always tell people, stick to the 5 C's, okay? If you stick to the 5 C's, no matter where you're updating online your details, it's clear. So you want to be very direct and clear with who you are, what you're selling. Concise. Concise just means people are going to read quick. We're all consumers ourselves. We want accuracy quickly. So clear, concise, correct is our accuracy touch point. So provide correct details. Your store hours may have changed. You might have moved locations. Make sure you're adding correct details. Clear, concise, correct, courteous. So be friendly. You'd be surprised how many times you go online and you read something and it feels a little bit abrupt or short or brief. You know, go ahead and put your store personality in there, because I'm betting, you know, you give great customer care. Let that authenticity of who you are come through. And the final one's consistency. Be consistent across not just Google, but everywhere we're going to talk about today.
Okay, gotcha. So let's talk a little bit how it relates to SEO, right? Sure. Search engine optimization. How important is your business profile as part of SEO?
it's actually very important. There's a lot of, you know, SEO that's in your control, and there's a lot that's out of your control. So what I mean by that is that if you are accurately setting up your profiles and all the touch points of where you need to be, that's going to strengthen your SEO. The other thing that will help your SEO is how often you're being searched for, okay? So if you're encouraging, let's say, your in-store customers to give an online review for Google, that's going to actually help your SEO. So look at your SEO as your friend. Don't look at it as a dismissed partner in your business, but rather an immediate partner in your business. And it can truly help optimize your total placement in that SEO search.
Do we know if Google reviews are weighted higher than Yelp or any of the others?
You know, that's a great question. And I've tried to dig for that in a few different ways. And I do have a direct line of communication at Yelp, for example, that we work with directly and has given some great intel over the years. I think it varies, to be honest. I think it goes up against your competition, every local marketplace. So if you go to Google and Westminster, Colorado, where I live, versus where you live in Florida, you know, the people in our communities are using it differently. And so that's going to influence all of that.
I'll go a different route. So which types of social media content tend to inspire people to walk in the store more?
I think the content that generally speaks to the emotion of a consumer is what makes the consumer say, I want to be a part of that, right? So if you're sharing content that speaks to something that they feel connected to, that's going to be the biggest driver of foot traffic to your physical space. So an example of that might be if you on your Google profile or social media share that every Monday you have a certain event that speaks to something they can relate to, a casual little gathering of something, or even just maybe a percentage of purchases goes towards a local rescue place. That speaks to emotion, but those are for in-store purchases only. That's going to draw action from your target market audience. So I think that it's fair to consider that in your own efforts of how you're communicating that online so that people do feel that draw into your physical location.
And I would, you know, getting kind of back to social media where what we were talking about before, have you checked your social media? Have you checked your Facebook information lately? Is everything accurate in there? Are your hours accurate in there? Any place that you have social media, check your bio and make sure it's up to date, including your description. You get that paragraph description, make sure that's up to date as well, because that's also frustrating. If I go to Facebook to see what your hours are and they're wrong, okay, show up, right?
Yeah. And that's the consistency part. So what we're talking about today, no matter what specific online place we're talking about, kind of holds true for everywhere in that consistency component. You want full clarity of all the details of your store, even your return policy, you know, even your, you know, customer service or gift cards. There's a lot of places where you can add those additional details. You want full transparency to all of that.
So the difference, a lot of our retailers will have the brick and mortar and they'll have online. And there's always that, you can do so many touches to your client base in a certain period of time. Yep. And it's always tricky to know, should I be doing promoting local or should I be promoting online, and how much of each should I do? When should I do each? Do you have anything for that?
So one of the things I would say, a huge benefit about your online marketing is that for the most part, you can read and react to the data you collect. So you, for example, even Google, you can see where your customers are coming from. Are they driving traffic from a Google search to your website? Are they mostly coming from your email marketing campaigns? So if you implement everything right, data is going to be your best friend online. And so then you're able to say, you know what? Those newsletters I send out once a week are one of the biggest drivers of traffic to our personal URL. So looking at that data can help you make more proactive decisions, but also more importantly, more profitable decisions, right? You can invest your time management online to better support how your consumers are engaging with you.
So across all spectrums, is it more expensive? Is your sale more expensive in-house, in-store, or is it more expensive online?
Oh gosh, that is a tough question. I don't think it's a black and white answer, unfortunately. So because I think that some of our online efforts are driving that in-store, right? And even in your store, by the way, you should be encouraging people to stay connected online, because your best effort is to make sure that you're pulling a full circle of communication and connectivity to your customer. And that means the reality is they're not going to be in your store 7 days a week. For many of them, they won't even be in there one day a week. So you need to make sure online becomes a community they want to stay a part of with your store, driving them back when they need to be there.
So I know you do a lot of events and trade shows and things like that, and you speak at them. So obviously there's going to be a lot of vendors set up in 2 weeks here in Dallas for WESA. And some of those are new vendors. How do the new vendors, you know, the retailers only have so much time, and it's a big place, right? There's, you know, 1,000 booths, and, you know, there's just so much time in the day, you can't visit everybody. Granted, your retailers are going to go back to the big ones that they place orders with all the time, and they're going to do that. And then they're going to have a certain limited amount of time to check out the new booths. How can I stand out as a new booth owner? Maybe I only have one booth. Maybe I don't have two or three. I can't, you know, I can't do this large booth effect. I got one booth, and how can I catch their attention?
Well, today's consumers are very interested in what I refer to as gamification, particularly at a trade show. So what can you do to pull them in, right? Because if you're at a trade show and you have a 6-foot booth as a smaller vendor, let's say a traditional 6-foot table, maybe 8 feet across total, how will you capture that foot traffic that walks by you? And so anything where you can make them pause right away, because the reality is they might not pause without having a reason to. So whether it's throw a ball into, you know, a bucket out of horse feed or an empty bucket of horse feed or something. You know what I mean? Like, get creative, create something that draws a moment for people to say, ooh, what is that? I want to learn about that. Or I just simply want to do that. And at that moment, then they begin to learn about what your service or product is you might be selling. So gamification at trade shows is really important. And that kind of crosses all generations. It doesn't even have to be a specific, let's say, horse game per se. It could just be something like, have you ever seen those rings where people try to like get the ring on a little ledge? People stop for that. If you have a giveaway, great. Sometimes the giveaway might be, you know, $50 value towards an immediate wholesale order. So, you know, think about how you get creative there, or spin the wheel, like you flip it and spin it. Those are all fun, very, very easy to implement ways to get people to stop and begin to learn about what you're doing. But then, of course, let's talk about the actual booth itself. Once you're there to highlight your product, make sure you're using all the tools and tips that you've learned for your brick and mortar stores too. We've talked about over the, well, you talk about all the time, but make sure that we're learning like displays. Let's look at our height. Don't just be flat. Let's use the height in front of us. Let's use them behind us and create a moment where people are engaged through merchandising and display.
One of the popular things that's been used for years, and I have mixed feelings about it, I wanted to get your opinion. So one of the obviously popular ones is you get a discount if you order at the show, you know, and order by the end of the show. I always had a little bit of a problem with that, especially for new orders, right? If I'm ordering from you new and I'm deciding if I want to buy from you, let's say I'm the retailer now, and I've been in that boat for a lot of years, I may have a certain amount of money that I'm committing to spending at the show, and then I have another amount of money that I'm going to put down on new stuff, right?
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily want to make that decision in the 2-3 days I'm there. And I always thought it was a mistake to do that. You have to buy it by the end of the show to get the discount. I always thought that should be extended 1 week. I always thought they would do better if they extended it 1 week. I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong about that.
I agree with you. And so that's why I think I think you should say a $50 value. I don't think you should say it has to be at the show. I think you give them a coupon and it expires within 10 days after the show, right? But, or some sort of code that you can track and make sure it's.
And isn't that going to be especially true this year with everybody watching a little bit more about what they're spending right now than they were a year ago?
Yeah. I think it's actually unfair to tell a buyer you have to make a decision now, because they need to thoughtfully merchandise. If a retail buyer is truly taking this from the best position, not only are they cross-referencing historical data from their business, but they're cross-referencing collective show insight that they gather. And they can't do that. If they were being pushed in the corner to sit down at a show to do that, then they wouldn't even be getting to optimize all of the great experiences from the show.
And it is stressful as a retailer when you're there because you want cool new stuff, right? But you do have to watch what you spend, right? We've discussed that before on this show too.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you have a limited budget. It's not endless, you know, for anybody, whether you're a big, medium or small store.
That's true. Right.
Matter of fact, the big stores, sometimes that, you know, the budget is stricter. So the buyers have to go by a certain guideline, period. You know, it's a little bit tougher. Are there certain, let's go back to the store now and back to consumers. We're back at the brick and mortar tax shop. But I do want to have a follow-up question on the Google Business Profile. Can I link categories? Like if I search tax shop, certain ones show up. Yes. Can I, in my profile, say I want to appear on certain searches, or is that a Google thing, period?
I do believe you can, to be honest. And I've personally built the profiles. I've worked with clients who've built the profiles. And I believe the answer is yes to that. But I do think there are some limitations. I don't think it's like fully endless. I think it's like, there's a way to do it. There's also just, you know, a way to enhance your profile, and that does include a payment. So I think like the basic version is just that, it's basic. But as you begin to enhance it, and this is true for Yelp, by the way, too, you can pay to play, so to speak, a little bit more.
Is it worth it?
Well, I can tell you that it's been very worth it for many customers that I've seen invest in it, like clients of mine. But what I will tell you is it's not worth it if you don't plan to manage it. So that means if you're not actively looking to see, hey, did I get a post? Did someone leave a comment this week? Have I included in my store a QR code for people to quickly access Google and leave a comment? If you're not investing in your investment, then don't do it. But if you're proactively saying, you know what, I'm choosing to invest in Google as a strategy for marketing, and I'm going to prioritize all the best efforts to do so, then yes, I think it can absolutely be worth investing in.
So is it worth it? So the retailer now, let's change gears again. The retailer's going to WESA. Now they're a retailer going to WESA. How much is, I have an answer for this in my own opinion, but how much should they be posting from WESA back to their consumers? In other words, I found this cool new product, or I'm here with Ariat. You all love Ariat. You know, how much social media should they be doing, especially with short video now, you know, reels and short video? Is that effective for the retailer to do while they're at a trade show?
I think there's probably a best version scenario of this, and then there's probably a version that doesn't make sense for their audience. Their professional business page is reaching their consumers, right? And their consumers are not investing in a trade purchase, but they're investing in the product that they're sourcing. So I think as long as the person communicating is very much, you know, holding their phone and saying, I'm here with, you know, Wrangler today, and here's what we're looking at, and this is what you can look forward to in our stores, or maybe it's even a quick picture or a roundup, if you will, a retail roundup from WESA, right? What you can look forward to. I think if the storytelling caters to their customer, it makes sense. But if they start to sideline and like talk about the vast big show of itself and all the different assortments, well, that little store might not carry every single thing. So you have to be kind of curated of what you're talking about.
We have done for the last, I don't know, seems like 20 years, we have done new product highlights for our shows.
Yeah,
where I do interviews there right at the booth about new products that are coming out. And one of the things we have focus groups and things for our shows, they love new product highlights because they like to hear about it first before it comes out. And they're short, you know, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, very short. And then we'll put whole episodes together with new product highlights. And again, they're very popular. Our listeners love that. So I think retailers can be doing that. If you find a new product, you're there at the booth, and you do a short video with the new product and why you think it's going to be so cool, and it's coming out in September, and you'll see it at our shop. Now, you do 4 or 5 of those. You're not doing 100, right?
Correct.
And you're spreading it out over, maybe you do 2 a day or 1 a day or whatever, putting out your social media. I think that's very effective because people love new products.
Yeah, and sometimes the founder might be there. Sometimes the founder or the inventor of a product could be there. And that's super cool to like share that. And that, I think, speaks to the emotion then of your audience too. They feel attached to it. They become curious about it. And they look forward to hopefully seeing it at your store.
And what another thing you can do with that too is you're a retailer and you meet an influencer in your community at the show. Don't be afraid to do a short video with the influencer too. They're influencers for a reason, you know, and if they'll do an I know I hate that term, I do hate it, but it's I don't know. I don't have a better one. So
they're influential, keep people curious. And a lot of people are influencers because they've earned that, they are either communicating, entertaining, educating, however it might be. And that's definitely worth sharing.
And if you see me there, I'd be happy to do one with you. So I do those all the time when I'm at the show. It's just fun.
Yeah.
It's just fun. All right. So what kind of strategy do you put into place? And I think this is where a lot of us fall down to, and I include myself in that because I work both ends. I've worked the wholesale side and the retail side.
Yep.
We're going to a trade show. I'm a wholesaler or manufacturer. I'm set up there. We get a lot of orders. So we're always processing those after, and we tend to put off our follow-ups to the leads that we got that didn't order. And yet, those are the ones that we should be doing almost, within a certain, I don't say the day or two after, because people are getting too many, there's too much stuff the day, a couple days after. I always said, and I want to know what you think, I always said, wait a week. Let them get through all, let the retailers, your consumers get through all the stuff they have to deal with when they get home. They're also processing all their orders and getting them put into the system and ready for receiving them. Do you say a week? Is that first contact after, or is that too long?
No, I do usually say a week. I say let them get through their first weekend home is what I typically say. Shows vary with when they end, whether it's a Thursday or a Tuesday or even a Saturday. Let them get through that weekend, decompress, because people go home. They have to settle back into their personal lives as well as professional lives. Give them a moment, but definitely don't wait too far. If you go too far away, you have the opposite problem of probably being dismissed from their reaction.
Yeah, like 3 weeks, I've forgotten who you are.
Exactly. And I see that all the time, though, across many categories, where, in fact, I'll talk to people who have invested in exhibiting, particularly younger brands, and they're like, well, I still have to reach out, but it's like a month later. I'm thinking that investment in the show is not just the 2 or 5 or 7 days you're there. It is literally about a 3-week cycle. It's got your pre-show marketing, your on-site marketing, your post-show efforts. And I think it does matter for sure.
And you've just spent a lot of money to be there.
100%. Yeah.
I mean, between travel and the booth and everything else, you've just spent a lot of money to be there. Yeah. I also, we tended to do this, and I'd love your opinion on this too. I'm totally off of what we're going to talk about, but I think it's important. So I'm the booth holder, and I've got this pile of leads that I input and maybe do a mass email to, right, as a follow-up. I always took the top 20 or 25, and I did personal emails to them.
Oh yeah.
Because I would make little notes on it. You maybe can't do that for 200, right? Because I do have a limited amount of time. But I know the top 20 or 25 that I have a good shot of getting an order, or I want to get an order from, or I just know they were hotter, right? They were hotter lead.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the personal emails to them, and I might do a mass email to everybody else. Thoughts?
I absolutely love that. I mean, I of the old school mindset that even a personalized handwritten note on occasion deserves to be completed. So I think that that's a great way to approach it. As someone who, again, supports shows, a variety of things, I've even seen, people at their trade show booth waiting because they know a certain buyer might be coming to have a meeting with, either it's an existing buyer or a prospective buyer, and they have a little something ready to give them as a sample. And I realize not all products lend themselves towards this, but I think that personalized touch in general is very, very important, because business decision makers, while they care about everyone, they care about themselves and their business the most. And so if you can make it feel a little bit uniquely more important to them, they're going to notice that.
The other thing too is the order after the first order, that the order I placed at the show, if I get a handwritten note from whether it was my salesperson or the head of the whoever it was, a handwritten note with my name on it, Glenn, it was good to see you at the show. Thank you so much for this first order. It's just short. It doesn't have to be long, but it's handwritten on some kind of cool card, right? I'm noticing that.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I can tell you in a lot of the work we do, we have something here, like I write on the back and the invites on the front. We do a lot of that in our own business, and we'd love to see that in the business that we partner with. So I say that meaning whether you're a retailer or a vendor or even the trade show operator, there are so many angles that come into business being successful. Anywhere you can add that touch is, I think, a win.
The way they did it easily, the one booth I saw, and I love the way they did this, they had multiple salespeople. So they probably made, let's say they had five salespeople that were there writing up orders. On the order itself, usually written by hand at a trade show, it's usually not done in, you know, in a computer. Even if it was in the computer, the salesperson, as soon as they were done, would handwrite the note and attach it to the order so it could easily go back and be put in the box because they're not at the warehouse.
So smart. That's amazing.
They would do it right there because then it got done. Otherwise, it would never get done.
And honestly, sometimes there is a moment of, let's say, low at a trade show where that's a really effective way to manage your time.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I totally agree. So what other things, let's do two avenues here. What other things a retailer with brick and mortar and online or either one, do you have a takeaway or two for them? And then we'll go back to the trade show.
So for a retail online who also has a brick and mortar store, I would say that on your team, whether it's yourself managing it or someone else on your team, set yourself something on your calendar weekly schedule. So let's say when you know, let's say Tuesdays in the morning, you provide office time for yourself or whomever this is, to do a online check, right? You're checking all the touch points that you exist, whether it's Google, Yelp, any other marketplace, do a generic Google search engine search for your business just to make sure something else hasn't popped up along the way. Many businesses also are community partners to their local chamber or anywhere else that offer directory listings. So make sure you're incorporating that. Have a checklist that you are weekly checking on. So the first step, if you don't have it already, is to make that checklist. But then moving ahead, once you've updated all the contact information, everything else we've discussed, make it a weekly check to just simply check in, because customers are leaving reviews places that you might not even know exist. And that's one of the biggest things that we want to monitor so that you can react to them. Even if it's whether it's a positive or a not so great review, you do want to react and say, thank you so much for taking the time to visit our store. We appreciate you sharing your feedback. You know, we look forward to welcoming you again. Enjoy the X, Y, or Z that they may have shared that they purchased, right? But if it's negative, you also want to react. Yelp once had some great data about a year or two ago that revealed that reviews that actually had a negative or two post were actually some of their most favorited stores visited, because consumers want to see the authenticity in how a store reacts to it. So don't look at a negative review as the worst thing in the world. It's more about how you react to it that other people who see that will ultimately react to them as well.
Aren't we always surprised when you order on Amazon or wherever, right? And you see the reviews and you see that the company has responded to them. I'm always shocked.
Yeah. because they're very smart. They're doing what they know is going to matter. And so I think that's a simple little thing that you guys can do too. And by the way, if you're getting those great online reviews, go ahead and hit print. Put them in a little frame. Add them to your store shelves by something that makes sense. Right? If they are directly calling out a employee, make sure you're letting your employee know. They should feel that, you know, sentiment of gratitude for sure. And so there's just a lot of ways you can incorporate that online into that physical experience also.
All right. Now let's go back to the trade show. What do you want to leave for the vendors that are set up there?
So for your vendors, I would say make sure you're personalizing it. We've certainly talked about that a little bit today. Make sure you're bringing a call to action to your booth. What is that call to action? We all know it's for you to get orders, but what's the first call to action so that they actually stop and participate in discovering whatever it is you're doing? So don't just be, and I hate to use this word generic, but there are plenty of booths that set up and they're a little generic. They're a little flat. Your investment is too big of both time, dollars, and effort. So let's make sure you're bringing a call to action that gives people a moment to hit pause and begin to get to learn about what you're doing.
Can I add to that? The other thing that I'm always shocked at is when I stop, let's say I'm the retailer stopping at a booth, and I ask about a specific product, and their answer is not a 3 or 4 sentence elevator speech talk. Yeah. It's the whole thing that takes 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. Have that elevator talk down, which is short, that you catch my attention with and keep me wanting to stay around for the 10 minute.
Yeah.
If you go into the 10 minute, all I'm thinking about is where I have to go next.
That's exactly right. I think that's an amazing point. People talk way too much and they need to keep it brief. It actually goes back to those C's we said earlier, clear and concise. When you're speaking or writing, keep it clear and concise.
Yep. And that's true at the booth. You got to remember, they're looking at 1,000 products today. I need to know in a couple of sentences why I should keep hanging around to find out more about yours. Because if I don't get that in a 2 or 3 sentences, I'm tuning out.
Yeah, it's sort of like Shark Tank. I mean, that's kind of what it's like. You're on a constant rotation of pitching, right? And you need to make sure people are paying attention. Don't lose them too quick.
It's good to practice those elevator talks for the different products.
100%. I could not agree more with that.
Yeah, that's one of the other annoyances at a trade show, right? Is I have limited time and I know you're excited about your product, but why should I be in the first couple of sentences?
Yes, 100% agree with you.
Yep.
Yes.
That's the number one, you know, sales technique out there is you've got to tell me why I should be excited.
100%. Yep. It has to be about your audience. It can't just be about you, right? Because the benefit has to be to your customer who's going to potentially invest in purchasing this.
And you'll see that, especially with new customers who invented a product or new booths there who invented a product. They're very excited. I get that. You know, yes. I get that. But in the first couple of sentences, tell me why I should be excited about it.
Yes.
I shouldn't have to wait 5 minutes to get to that nugget.
Yes. Yeah. Perfect.
All right. Where can people find you? You have a book, too, that they're going to want to get.
So, yes, my book is called Retail 101 from McGraw-Hill. So always check out that if you'd like. It's a great actionable guide to supporting you in your general retail efforts.
Get it at all the usual spots?
Yes. So Amazon, of course, has it. Select bookstores. It's just dependent on the bookstore, but you can always find it on Amazon. So
okay. What's it called again? Retail 101?
The Guide to Managing and Marketing Your Business from Retail 101.
Yes. Gotcha. Okay, great. And then, of course, your website is retailminded.com.
Yes, it is, retailminded.com. And there's a variety of articles. You just go to a little search bar, whatever you're looking for, merchandising ideas. It's all free. And it's just a great resource to help brick and mortar and online retailers.
Now, do you consult with individual retailers or do you just do groups or what?
So I do primarily groups, but also consulting. So it's great. I love working with groups, but I also love working with individual businesses. I can do it virtually as well as physical. I am based in the Denver area.
All right, great. Well, it's good to have you back.
Yes, it's so good to see you. I always love chatting with another PA-er, Pennsylvania. What's the word?
Yeah, we actually grew up not too far from each other. Real close, actually.
Yes, always fun.
Well, thank you for joining us on the WESA Retail Roundup. To watch the Retail Roundups, check out the WESA Trade Show YouTube channel. You'll find them all there. You can also find all of these episodes on the Wisdom by WESA podcast feed if you'd prefer to have it in audio version. If you see me wandering around at WESA, whether you're a retailer, wholesaler, whoever, say hi. We'd love to see you. We will be recording for the manufacturers and people with booths, for the booth holders, we will be recording new product interviews. So if you have a new product, you see me walking by, catch me, and we'll do an interview. And we, of course, have a website at wesatradeshow.com. The next Retail Roundup will be released on Tuesday, August the 5th. Stay up to date with all of it. Of course, the Facebook group, just search for Retail Roundup. Thank you, Nicole.
It's so good to see you. Have a great show, everybody.